Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Product Coffee, a podcast where product management leaders share stories, advice, and thoughts on all things product over a cup of coffee. Grab a cup of Joe and join us to level up your product career 30 minutes at a time.
Something top of my mind is empowering teams to do the great work. There's so much that goes into it around how you structure, organize the teams, how you provide the proper context, how you enable autonomy, and how you hold teams accountable. There's a lot to unpack with that.
Yeah, I guess it's the hardest thing because there's no perfect answer.
No. It has to be perfect.
I know, right? Well, I mean, it's funny. It's like, you know, more or less, like we can kind of say that like agile develop, like I feel like in a lot of stuff products, right? You can say, okay, a lot of these techniques, more or less, like 70 to 80% of the time, will at least yield you a result you're kind of looking for, right? If you apply them properly, right? We all kind of know agile development is, you know, probably far superior to waterfall type development in like 70% of cases, right? So we kind of know that.
Yeah.
I feel like restructuring and reorging and getting, you know, the people to do the most efficient work possible is like a scenario that we all try to do better every single time. And then we all fall into the exact same traps every single
time. Yes, sure. I like this. Yeah.
Right. You know, and I think some of those traps are one, like the first thing is I'll call it, you end up trying to play God with, you know, people and teams thinking of the perfect solutions. Right. You know, because you're trying to organize for the current problems and the future problems. You're trying to reorganize to make political statements to the business about where your focus areas are. You know, there's all those reasons. And some of them are fine. But then reality kind of hits and, you know, you realize some stuff would have been better left alone and other things the same. Sorry. I hope that's like, I I'm going through something very similar. And so. And I will say this is probably my, oh God, 9th, 10th reorg in 5 years.
Oh man, they never end, right? Well, I think it's a good point. Like, I think the processes around being agile and the traps are one thing, but I think the reorg is also maybe an attempt at providing for a more clear context for the teams to say, yeah, it's an effort to drive more clear, concise strategy that has more context around it. So for instance, if you had like most common one I see is like a back end front end team, right? One team's working on the back end, one team's working on the front end. Then what happens is they kind of lose sight of what they're attempting to solve for. So it's like, oh, I'm just trying to get this stuff done, where it's more like a feature factory, right? I'm just execute. I have no context as to what it's driving, because I don't have full ownership over making a solution that would solve the problem. So what's the point, kind of thing? And it naturally gravitates towards that if it's so separated. So there's like a reorg around, I think, autonomy, which is one way to help empower teams with tools and context to actually solve the majority of the problem. And then there's also like a reorg around the context and more, you know, hey, this is a team that ended up building a internal tool for internal folks that is losing sight of the value that we're driving for a customer, and to kind of reorient it or reorganize it around the customer context. I might maybe see those two being the most common that I've seen, but.
Yeah, I mean, in my view, I've it's like, I'll put it this way, right? Like, tactically necessary in a lot of situations. And I kind of say that, like, you know, just because it's like priority shift, right? And teams have to shift along with priority. So like, once we kind of establish that and you realize that you kind of have to be agile with your org, just like you're agile with your development cycle, then it kind of like starts to make sense. The reality in there too is that like moving people and transitioning people and changing priorities and team structures is inherently slow, right? Like it always takes time for teams to get used to working together, right? You know, say norming for or forming, norming and storming. Right. And, you know, so there is some like, I feel like that's one of those constraints that I always kind of like try to push back on sometimes when we're doing things is like, do we have teams that are performing well? How can we leave those teams performing well? You know, do we, you know, how do we make sure that we're still getting the most out of it? You know, and then there's the bigger question, is it easier to shape work to teams or teams to work? Right. And, you know, the answer is, I feel like I said on all these, I don't know if there's ever a perfect scenario other than to say that the, you know, that the org can't stay solid because that's the problem and the org can't change too much, you know? So it's kind of a...
You need to kind of get build some consistency and just and try things out. Yeah. And then there's times to make changes and times not to. I like that. I think it makes sense. And I think, we're always consistently changing in that agile mindset, and that's kind of what to be expected. And I try to shoot for major topology changes very less frequent than more of the strategic focuses, right? Like, well, I don't know if that makes sense. So topologies maybe on the annual basis, because I think working with a certain group of people for a variety, like it needs time to, again, what you said, storm or form, storm, norm. And then the context itself for the team, maybe that kind of goes part and parcel with the topology in some cases. One of the biggest things that I'm trying to figure out is the autonomy and skill sets. So thinking of, do you have the proper skill sets on your team to accomplish and solve the job for the customer? Like, and that is one that is not easy because part and parcel either requires hiring or shifting resources to support it. And then there's the reevaluation of the thing itself. Is like, is that the right thing for them to solve? So more of the strategy. So I get, they're kind of intertwined, but.
Yeah, I think, you know, my philosophy used to be, and I always believed this was the thing that I always thought worked the best, you know, but I always, you know, it was always a contentious point. I believed that if you were organized right into sub groups with squads or groups with squads, as long as the group had the culminative resources necessary, that work could be shared in and amongst the group, assuming that you have a shared objective. Now, the challenge being is, you know, I've been, you know, exposed to some people who think like, oh, well, each team needs to have all the resources that it needs. It's like, well, it's true. I've seen that. And I've seen what happens when you put iOS engineers next to platform developers. And sometimes it speeds it along. And then other times you realize that 80% or 90% of your work is on the iOS side and the platform engineers are there for like two things, you know? And then that ends up being the question of like, well, then do we create a team of all the platform engineers in the group that services the rest of them? Ah, well, then they feel like they're left out of this. You know, I mean, it's always a... But, you know, it's funny is like, you know, maybe I'm blasé about it, but it's like you try to do your best. You try to solve the problems that are ahead of you. You realize that maybe you're going to solve 70 or 80% of that problem and call it good.
Yeah, sure. That makes sense. So I guess what is the flavor of the reorg for you today? Is it more around like a certain theme? Like, are you trying to solve a different problem or like what is the... What's the thing?
Yeah, it's twofold. So I would say that the first is that our company did some layoffs. And with that, it kind of caused us to rethink about our priorities. You know, are we investing in the right areas? And which is a good thing. Like you should be thinking about that. However, in that process, you know, we kind of also identified that there were some numbers games, like how many people to an engineering team lead, how many reports to people. In our case, international geographic zones, right? Like if we reduced headcount in one area, we can't like just randomly add them into another area, or maybe we have to like, you know, there's so many of those considerations in terms of how we built the teams that we kind of just had to go back to the drawing board and say, yeah, here's the top priorities that we have. How do we organize around them? And, you know, do our best to go with the company constraints. For example, one constraint was our company no longer wanted to do any like small pod where maybe you have like four developers, and we really, and all pods are targeted to be more in the like eight range. So as a result, right, if you had, and we had some small pods, like, so, you know, we're going to combine some of those and we're going to, you know, deal with some of like, just, hey, here's the guidance that the business has told us. And like, you know, that's policy, like we're going with it. And like, so kind of, we had to kind of deal with some of that in there as well. So yeah, I would say it's half strategic and half like tactical policy changes that the business wanted to make.
Yeah. Wait, can you restate the policy changes for the small pods versus not? What was that?
So one of the policy changes, like from an engineering organization standpoint, is first that they wanted pods to be right around eight people in size. So if you had any smaller pods, we needed to look at, you know, either combining small pods or shifting people into different pods, or squads, whatever nomenclature you use. So that one's like a purely practical, like, and honestly, I get it, right? If you have three people that go out on vacation and you have one dude sitting there, like, yeah, that doesn't work.
Right.
Another tactical one was the number of direct reports that an engineering team leader and engineering manager have. So that was like, okay, yeah, like you know, we can't have over this number and we shouldn't have under this number. Otherwise it doesn't make sense.
Right.
So yeah, there were some straight numerical considerations. And then on top of that, it was like, well, if you're doing all of this stuff, what do these bigger pods work on? You know?
I guess, is that, what, can you answer that?
I'm starting to think about it.
Well, I mean, thematic, right? Is it that they're working on supporting a platform, multiple features, a product, or is it like this?
In our case, like, so I work in the platform technology side. So we do a lot of support, you know, with our AWS resources, our shared business services and the like. And so one of the things that we did is we inherited some new products into our portfolio, and they were around shared business services. So we created a shared business services pod, right? And they inherited like three new products and then also some extra headcount that came along with them. So that kind of like worked out both numerically and otherwise. And this would be stuff like our communications thing. So we have inside of Xero, we have a mailing client, we have push notification clients, we have file storage and file like sharing. So all of that's being combined into kind of a communications platform business service pod, because strategically that's an area that we want to invest in for a lot of reasons.
Anyway, why is the top of mind for you?
Yeah, I think, I think it's more about the context. I think, you know, every annual turn, I think it's always a top of mind to think of strategy and how, if your strategies are working or not, or what are your new strategies and altering things and seeing, okay, now how do I provide that context of the new strategy, or if we deploy these things or evaluate them and then change them, what is the right kind of context to help share with the team to then let them do the great work? And so there's so many problems to solve in the industry. And, you know, the way that we've chosen our strategy was very focused and intentional. And there's elements that have panned out and elements that haven't panned out enough. But it also seemed to be not the strategy or the bets, the focuses that we've decided to take, but somewhat more of like this kind of dependency, right? Do you control your destiny to solve that customer problem or not? And if 90% of the work is on another team in order to solve that problem, you know, we're not helping the team be successful. And so we're kind of I think that's the pivotal moment that we're at now, is like there's some aspects of the job that are dependent on other teams and they're not divvied up appropriately. And I think it either means, you know, you focus, you shuffle around folks to make sure that they're contributing with control and autonomy, and or, you know, reevaluate that strategy to say, well, you know, whatever way we cut it, it's always going to be this, you know, 80-20 or 70-30, whatever it is, split. And, you know, because of that, it's not the right thing to that we can have the bandwidth to take on right now. And so maybe it's more of a strategic prioritization decision to say, we're going to focus in on what we can have the capacity to control versus taking on a little bit extra of what we might not be able to fully control.
Yeah, I gotcha.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, that's... Okay, so that's kind of like, yeah, the resource skill problem that's in there. I mean, totally understandable.
It's kind of all layered on one, right? Resource, skill, strategy. It's like, it's all in one where it's like, well, you have all these variables and moving pieces, and where do you want to make a better bet or a different bet or to see what that chance would look like?
Well, I guess that, you know, I don't mean to call it passing the proverbial buck, but, you know, in product world, right, our goal is to identify those really, you know, our goal is to make sure we're working on the most important things, right? Engineering is supposed to sit there and figure out who works on the really important things and do we have the right skill set in engineering to work on those things, you know? And I mean, I don't like, you know, and don't get me wrong, one of the criticisms I've often gotten myself in product and I've gotten myself in trouble for is being way too interested in the engineering side of the world. But, you know, I think there is a point where, like, you know, we kind of chuck it over the fence and say, hey, we found the 10 most meaningful things we could do. It seems like 5 or 6 of these can be mapped to existing teams. And there's 4 of them that we need to make some decisions about and decide whether or not that involves, you know, organizing ourselves to accomplish them, saying it's not worth it right now, or we don't have the ability to accomplish them. And, you know, then we just have to let our executives and stakeholders and everybody else know and be like, yeah, you know, here's, you know, we could go after X, Y, or Z, but if we don't have the stomach or the skills or the ability, then kind of moot.
Yeah,
and they might go on the flip side. They might go, you know, your executives might go, hey, no, actually, we really like that. Let's go start hiring and let's figure it out. You know,
the best case scenario, right?
Well, sure. I mean, it's the best and worst case.
The desired scenario.
Yeah, well, it's the best and worst case scenario because then you hire people, then you better be right.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Maybe I can ask a different question here. So with some of the work that you've done in the past on your teams, and either it's, I mean, maybe in the same group that has shared resources could be one way of looking at this, but have you ever as a PM been given a project where, you know, let's say the majority of the solution is built or needs to be built by another team? Or has it always been more within the realm of what your team has?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I've gotten that a lot. I'll say I've got two parts
to it.
Tell
me more.
Yeah.
Tell me more.
There's two solutions to that. One, if you believe that it's absolutely critical and needs to be done, right? You know, your first step is obviously talking to the other team and saying, hey, I need you to help us get this done. It's super meaningful. You know, let's talk about how we could partner on it. And they might go, oh, yeah, well, let's talk about our priorities. And, you know, and in a good world, right, it works itself out. The other world is they're too busy. They've got other stuff. You still believe it's really strong. So then you go to your executive team and go, yeah, well, how do you rank this against the globalized priorities? And then I don't want to say it, you kind of get a higher up decision to pull that in. And the last stage in there is, okay, well, you know, perhaps like you need to, I'll give you a good example. When I was working at Ibotta, and you remember this, we had content service, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes if you wanted to create a feature, you needed to make changes to content service, right? And content service had their own roadmap. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, one of the things that we ended up doing a little bit later on was saying, well, why don't we just use our platform engineers and go make changes to content service ourselves, and we'll just have them okay it. You know, and that ruffled a lot of feathers, but it was like, why couldn't I work in somewhere else's stack as long as we got them to approve it? So that was, you know, mm-hmm. But I think those are the things, if you have to like pull it off and try to get it done, that's how you do it. The other thing is just realizing, hey, yeah, okay, I guess maybe we can't do this, or it's going to take a long time, and you communicate that out. And then once again, like I hate to say it, but that's kind of where people like me and you and others come in, right? We get to look at all of those things from a high level and go, okay, yeah, let's pull it in, or let's not pull it in, or let's, you know, make those decisions that, you know, a higher level. And that's what we would do.
Yeah. So the coordination there it would be key in that case. Yep, right?
Exactly. So I think that's just kind of the point, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's at the end of the day, right? Facts are facts. And if you got, you know, hey, we could do X, Y, or Z, it's going to generate this much value, this much revenue, fix this problem. And, you know, other people go, okay, yeah, well, we've got all these other priorities, and somebody like you or I or anybody else needs to take a look at that and go, okay, well, yeah, let's, on a globalized scale, which one affects us more? How does it go toward our long-term strategies, our short-term strategies? Yeah, that thing may fix this one issue, but we're going to deprecate that product, so we don't really care, you know?
It's interesting. I think it seems that if, as a leader, you're kind of, here are your levers. If you're trying to strive for autonomy and leading with context, you can think about the problem in different ways here. You have different ways of looking at it, different ways of managing it. Based on the circumstances, if a team has the control and it's more context, that can be clear. If it's not, and you have to make, there has to be some decider to make a decision on whether or not we take on these new items or not, you kind of play that role. You're sitting in the mix there.
It's, you know, I think we kind of touch on a lot of the general pieces. I think from, you know, advice standpoint, what do we tell people? You know, I would say if you're an IC and you're in that type of situation, right? I think once you've exhausted your influential pieces, like how can I influence others to accomplish the work that I need to be done? You know, then you have to sit back and think, is this a time where I need to pull it up for, you know, consideration from higher orders? And if the answer is yeah, then go and do it. And if it's not, you know, pick something else, right? There's 50 million things you can always work on. The other side for leaders is, you know, always look at your global priorities, I think, somewhat asynchronously from where every team is, right? Your goal is to identify the most important thing to do. And sometimes that'll require team changing, reorging, remitting, remittance changes. But at the end of the day, your goal is still the same, right? Find the most high priority things to do and figure out if it's worth the organizational pain to get them done or the cost.
Worth the organizational pain. I like that.
There's always organizational pain.
Yeah.
What do you think, Kevin?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, I think that's good. I think one of the things that would be good is around context and making sure that the teams have a lot of context and proper context. Maybe not a lot, but more proper, more clear, more concise context. Still trying to figure out the right way to share that. Is that is it a remit, like you mentioned? Is it the way that the people on your team are structured and the products and projects that they're working on? Is that enough? Is there more, you know, this connective tissue of the mission, vision, strategy, vision, all this kind of stuff? Goals, you know, there's so many of these tools, and I feel like that can kind of get overwhelming and we lose sight of the real thing that matters. And trying to distill it down to one thing that would give the team a proper context to take an action on and feel empowered to do so, it's difficult. One of the things that recently Bob Mesta has been talking about was the struggle moments and kind of refining it to say, helping your customer make progress in their job and their life. And if that distillation of mission, vision, topology, strategy, measurement, team members all comes down to that, or like we can make that clear, it might be better off for folks.
Yeah, sure.
My ramblings for the day.
It sounds like we need to revisit this after you guys and after we've all made our organizational decisions and recap.
Yeah.
What did we do? How did it go? What was our process?
Yeah. Oh, that's a good one. I like that. Let's do that. Well, yeah, I guess anything else homework-wise you want to give to the audience or listeners?
I'll just give this general piece of advice to PMs. You know, don't reorgs and org changes and team changes happen so regularly. It's important in product to remember that you're a member of the product team, right? As much as you can get involved with your pods or your squads and the engineers and the people you work with daily, you know, I would encourage you to have a level of, you know, just the ability to step back and think about that and detach yourselves from it. Otherwise, every time an org change comes up or a person leaves or a new person gets hired, you're going to waste your time and your emotional energy thinking about it. When in reality, you should be thinking about, yeah, I'm a member of the product team. We service all these, you know, these teams. My goal is to be mutable. It's to be flexible. It's to discover the right things. That's a lot of feedback that I've been giving to people recently is, you know, it doesn't matter really what team you're on, you know, what pod or what thing you solve, as long as you're solving customer issues, you're delivering value, and that's what your goal is, you know?
Yes, yes, exactly. I think that's the core of it, right? It's like, as long as you're making, if you're helping solve a customer problem, you're able to do that. And then there's this meaning, there's this clarity, there's this focus throughout the noise of reorgs, of all that kind of craziness. Well, rate, subscribe. It's always helpful for us to get up in the app stores and what have you. So please go and do that. And if you have any questions or topics you want us to consider, you can always reach out via the website, or I'm sure you can find us in different ways. But that's about it. Those are the logistics, but looks like we finished up our coffee, so go level up.
This has been Product Coffee, produced and engineered by me, Kevin Gentry. Through our podcast partner, Anchor, you can now record a voice message and send us ideas or topics to cover, and who knows, we might end up playing it on the show. You can also become a supporter of Product Coffee by contributing a monthly donation to help us sustain future episodes. Please rate, review, and subscribe to Product Coffee on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.